I was like part of an organism, and I was just a cog in that, or a portion of that organism that didn't exist, had no life independently.
Welcome back to Meet Us Here, a podcast from All True, where we share real stories from real people to explore what living intentionally means. Today's episode is very close to my heart for reasons that will become clear in just a minute. But before we jump in, I do just want to give a quick heads up. In today's episode, we do talk about infant mortality in a pretty personal way. So if that is something that could be especially upsetting for you, you might want to skip this episode. Okay, today, the moms.
Probably one of the strongest memories of my childhood is that until I was about 9 or 10, there were 5 generations of women alive on my mom's side of the family. So there was my great-great-grandmother in her 90s, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and then me. So there's this huge, like, column of women above me.
This is my mom. Yeah, my mom.
I'm Sherry Rogers.
I sat down with her a few months ago. Honestly, I kind of just wanted to do like a warm-up interview with her before I started talking to the real guests. But our conversation went places that I wasn't expecting and kind of illuminated things about my mom that I hadn't understood before. I think there's something about having a microphone in front of you that makes you feel like, well, if I'm going to open up, this is the time to do it. I'd always known about the 5 generations of women my mom grew up with, the moms, as she calls them. I'd hear stories about them growing up. It was kind of this cool, unique thing. I knew about how her grandmother would hike down the hill from her house to her bakery every morning to make her famous meat pies, or how her great-great-grandmother came across the plains on a covered wagon. I even knew about how her mom left her first husband, my mom's biological dad, after having enough of him disappearing for weeks at a time, drinking away their food and electricity money. So yeah, I did know a lot of these stories about the moms. But what I really did not understand was just the massive force that they were in her life. Almost like gravity. For so long, she wasn't even conscious that this force was there, like, dictating all of these things in her life, her perception of the world and herself and her place in the world. But eventually, she does realize it's there, and she's kind of spent her life doing this tricky dance of both fighting against that force and loving deeply and appreciating the women behind it. But as a little girl growing up in Salt Lake City, Utah in the 1950s and 60s, she was just trying to keep up.
It was very daunting and intimidating, and I felt very small, but also, you know, fascinated by all these women and their interactions with each other. They had a really strong, kind of codependent, not always healthy, but loving at the same time relationship to each other. And I was so small in comparison to these, all these mothers above me. I was like part of an organism, and I was just a cog in that, or a portion of that organism that didn't exist, had no life independently.
Who she would be and what her life would look like was decided and projected onto her from the very beginning. She was the sweet, pretty one who would get married and have babies and take care of everyone in their old age.
They knew what I should be, would be, could be. It was stated to me explicitly.
One of her first memories of absorbing what her future was supposed to look like came at 7 years old.
My grandmother said, let's get Sherry a Barbie. And all of the grandmothers wanted to come. I think they were all really excited about, like, looking at this Barbie doll.
Barbies had just come out for the first time and were kind of a cultural sensation. And so all 5 generations of women pile into Nana's seafoam green Mercury, heading to the Holy Land, Sears.
I loved Sears because when you went in on the main floor, it was a cement floor that was covered in straw and hay. So they had all these life-size horses in there with saddles and things on them. And I would go around and pretend that I lived on a ranch and these were my horses, and I would talk to them all.
But eventually she pulls herself away from the ranching fantasy and finds the moms in the toy section.
They had a cart and it was just loaded to the hilt with Barbie stuff. A big trunk that all of her stuff went in. That was her closet, and a whole bunch of outfits. And the Barbie was standing on her tiptoes, which must have been incredibly uncomfortable. I think it was all selected by all of them, and I just stood there and watched. And, you know, I wasn't opposed at all, but I felt very disconnected from the whole operation, really.
When they got home, all the moms got down on the shag carpet in the living room, even her great-great-grandmother, a.k.a. old grandma, and tried on every single outfit.
The flight attendant outfit, this orange sweater set, twin set with a really skinny orange skirt, and they fought over everything. No, I'm going to put this one on. No, let's put this one on.
The big finale was a wedding dress.
Very full and nipped in at the waist, and the bodice came up just over the top of the chest, and then lace came up above that. And when they put the wedding dress on, a hush fell over the crowd. And they all just went away somewhere.
Suddenly, my mom was almost alone in the living room. All the moms had disappeared into some sort of fantasy or nostalgia, regret. But as they came back, one by one, they looked to the beautiful Barbie bride and then to my mom, 7 years old. And even then, it was clear to her.
That was what they wished for me. That was, to them, the be-all and end-all of life. You had arrived if you had that wedding. None of them got married under auspicious circumstances.
These four women had been through a lot. I mean, there was love and joy too, but their lives were marked by hurt and loss. There were unhappy marriages, sexual abuse, unstable childhoods, abandonment. My mom's mom spent some time before the age of 10 living in the back of a hair salon with her mom, who strung up towels to make a little room for her. Her mom had been sent away at age 13 to go be a live-in nanny for another family. Her mom was an alcoholic from the time she was a teenager and was married a total of 4 times.
Their experience was women were always beaten down, even though they all survived. So just find a nice guy who's going to take care of you and it'll be okay. You won't have to experience that.
And yet,
it was all these women who were getting everything done and who were making things happen and who were the power brokers in our family.
But that was by necessity. They'd all been let down by men at one, if not many, pivotal points in their lives, and so they'd had to make things happen for themselves. And they lived in a time, in a world, where that was not always an easy thing for a woman to do.
I think they didn't want me to go through what they'd been through, and yet, ironically, they were pushing me right towards what they had all been through. You know, I never really wanted to get married, but I didn't know what else to do. So I got married when I was, I think, 20.
But it lasted less than 2 years. And she felt caught between this image of herself as reflected by the moms, the sweet wife and caretaker she was always supposed to be, and this urge to break free of that, or at least test the waters of a possible identity outside of that. So she did just about the least sweet thing she could think of and entered the police academy.
It was testing myself to see if I could. I think that was the most powerful part, was pushing back against my own image of myself as just being sweet and pretty and trying to see if I was something else, but not really believing it. I don't think I really believed that I was anything more than that, but I wanted to test it.
She was one of 2 women in a class of 30. Only 2 of the men could beat her in their weekly runs, and she graduated 2nd in her class and became a police officer.
It did kind of teach me, oh, I can do things. It gave me a sort of self-confidence that I hadn't had in the past. My encounters were usually quite pleasant because, or at least civil, because I always tried to be respectful to people.
So, yeah, she was a cop. Something no one had ever expected for her, least of all herself. But she had not escaped the gravity of the moms. And letting go of an entrenched idea of who you are is not simple or easy. So as part of this constant identity push-pull, she got married again. Again, it only lasted a couple years, but in that time, he encouraged her to quit her job.
When I left my husband, who was physically abusive, I was pregnant, found myself single and pregnant and without a job. I took a job at a law firm as a secretary. And then I had a child who was born with a very severe spina bifida.
This is a birth defect in the spinal cord. The baby, Matthew, also had other birth defects, and it was clear he wouldn't survive.
And the doctors all said, oh, usually they miscarry, but he's very strong. And he lived about 6 months, actually, but we were never able to bring him home. He was like in a nursing home for babies. All the moms showed up again, and I felt like my pain was being taken by them. And so in response to that, I just got very steely, and I didn't cry.
I think my mom felt like this moment was the culmination of what felt like all her failures and bad decisions. They'd all led her here to this horrible rock bottom. And from her perspective at the time, the moms were swooping in and kind of using this as a way to bring her back fully into the organism and have her need them to experience this tragedy together as one.
Everything up to that point had been a group experience. It was the first experience I felt like was really my experience and not theirs. Even getting married was their experience. It was what they wanted and what they dreamed of. I didn't want it to be a group experience. We had found a place for the baby to be, but he was profoundly disabled. So, I think he felt being held. I like to believe that he felt being held and that it mattered to him. And that's when I started to feel the grief, because I would go there by myself. And so there I was able to cry or just talk to him and, you know, tell him I loved him and that I was sorry, and that I felt like I had let him down, even though it wasn't my fault, that somehow I had failed this little creature. So I went and I bought a couple of little gold baby rings, and I put them on a long chain around my neck that I kept tucked inside. And when he died, I put one on a chain around his neck with one of the rings on it, and I wore the other one. So that was pretty tough. I went through a really tough time of feeling like a failure, really feeling very, very lonely. And then I started to think, okay, so far nothing has worked. This has been a catastrophe. So what are you going to do to take charge of your own life now and not just keep going with the wind and doing whatever came along? The one thing I knew for sure is I did not ever want to have to stay in a marriage because I couldn't afford to take care of myself. That was the one thing I absolutely knew. I never want to be stuck in a marriage because I can't afford to get out.
The loss of a child would undo a lot of people. That could have been it. But she takes her heartbreak and lets it fuel her fight. She will not be in this position again. She will not feel powerless and defeated, and she will not be beholden to a man for financial security, like she saw her mom be with her stepdad. So she does take charge. She decides to go to law school. She actually gets a full ride to a great school. She makes law review. She starts believing that she is smart, that maybe she can do more than what's been planned for her. Eventually, she moves to New York as a lawyer. She actually becomes one of the top go-to entertainment lawyers in New York at the time. She produces some movies. She meets my dad, falls in love for real. And 10 years after she gave birth the first time, she has my brother, Sam, and me a few years later. And it's good. I mean, there's struggles, but it's a good life she made for herself and for us. Growing up, I did know a lot of her backstory and the things that she went through. And to me, it kind of just seemed like, you know, she had overcome all this stuff and gotten through it. And now here she was, this fully formed, confident, successful, compassionate, amazing person. And that was that. But of course, I didn't know about this force, this organism of the moms that she'd been negotiating her whole life. And so I didn't realize that.
I still question my ability to truly be different from or to deserve to do better. That if I do better, if I'm happier, I'm disrespecting all of them.
I think my mom means that these women had such high hopes for her. They did want her to be happy, but in their way, in their world, and leaving them behind and finding her own way of being happy felt like disrespecting them. It seems like many of the moms with their intertangled lives and identities shared this similar fate of never really finding that happiness, with the exception of my mom's grandma, Nana, who did ultimately find real and, by all accounts, like, totally beautiful love with her third husband and found purpose in her bakery. But many of them ended up waiting for forever for the thing or man that would save them. But my mom didn't keep waiting. She saved herself. But in spite of that, she still, like, looks at this fate that they all shared and in some ways feels
that I am destined to repeat that. I think that one of the defining characteristics of these women was a lot of anger at themselves and guilt. Even though there was love and joy and fun among all of them too, they all turned their fear and their anger inward on themselves. And I do that too, and I would really like to stop doing that. I would like to forgive myself. I feel like I've made a huge amount of progress, and I have the time in a way now to really reflect and try to take this and go to the next place, to have the joy and the gratitude come before the fear and the self-anger at times. And I tried very hard to not impart into my children anger.
When you're a kid, it's hard not to see your parent as a fully formed person. They are who they are. They have it all figured out. That's that. And then you grow up and you live some life yourself and you realize that you don't have it all figured out. You're still learning and growing all the time. And then I think it takes even longer after that to turn it back around and view your parent through that lens. Realize that they are still evolving and finding themselves. My mom says that this self-directed anger and fear that the moms felt, that she also feels, comes from hurt. And she's now trying to take hurt and turn it into something else. And I'm so happy that she has the space and freedom and self-awareness to be able to start to shift some of these things in her that don't serve her. In a way that the moms never really could. They never got that luxury. I'm also so grateful that she was already self-aware enough when I was growing up that she consciously didn't pass on some of those things to me. I don't feel that inward-facing anger. Because of her, that cycle stops with me. Instead, I just got to grow up hearing about all the incredible women I come from. The part of them that she chose to share most with me was their strength.
It's the thing I think about most about them now is how strong they were. My great-great-grandmother came across on a covered wagon and fed a huge family on an open fire stove and had a farm and had a store. And Grandma Mary was fighting to find meaning in her life. She was fighting to find love, you know, and then Nana, who was so strong and taught me kindness and how to be generous with people and to take care of others. And my mom, who she remarried when I was maybe four, She had a tough marriage, but her most important thing was to take care of all of us. And so she stayed in that marriage because he was a good provider and a good person, a really good person. They just weren't meant to be together. You know, she sacrificed a lot of her life for us. We all ended up having pretty great lives, and we couldn't have without her doing all that she did. So while I rebelled against them and I had to separate from them in order to find myself, they are still the reason for who I am. And they really wanted the dream for me. And I just had to figure out really what my dream was. And I feel so grateful that I found it. And also that I had them. They were the backbone of the family. And I always knew they were there. I always knew that they were there. And I think that's what gives a person a lot of strength in their life, actually, is knowing that there are people behind them who will always back them. And I definitely have that.
And I definitely have that too. Meet us here again next week. Same time, same place. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, rate, review, share with your friends. Meet Us Here is produced by me, Remy Nozick, and Cecilia Whitnable. Music from today's episode from Blue Dot Sessions, and mixing by Andrew Cedar.